I'm Greg Peterson with the Colorado Ag Water Alliance, and today I'm with Retta Brueger, the Regional Extension Specialist with CSU, and also Janie Van Winkle, Western Slope Rancher and current President of the Colorado Cattlemen's Association, and we're going to be discussing rangeland management during drought. This year, most of the state of Colorado has been in some stage of drought. Ranchers depend on the natural of rangeland grass and other forage plants to feed their free-ranging livestock. And while there are practices that can be implemented before drought occurs, we're going to be talking about, well, what can be done during drought right now, and also what can we be learning from this drought to prepare for next time. So first, let's talk about what drought is. What does drought look like across the region, and how does drought impact rangeland plants? Retta, Janie?
Well, I can start, and then Janie, you jump in with more. I think drought, for me, it's one of those things that's pretty intuitive. There's this kind of satirical article that I found once that the headline was, "Researchers agree drought equals bad, water is good." And I kind of laughed to myself because I think, you know, we all sort of know intuitively what drought is. Obviously, drier conditions than normal. But there's a lot of complexity about how drought forms and what it looks like on the ground that I think is important to acknowledge when we think about how do you build resilience to drought moving forward. So of course, in the world of rangelands, the primary impact of drought is reduced forage, and in some cases, reduced forage quality. Although drought can actually increase forage quality, there's just less of it. But in general, we're looking at reduced forage for many of the rangelands in Western Colorado. Plants in this part of the world are adapted to drought, so they can survive drought, but it does reduce the amount of foliage, so leaves, that they put up in the year. There's also indirect impacts of drought, and those can include, you know, lack of stock water. So in some cases, people might have forage, but they don't have the water in that particular area so that livestock can use that forage. And then, of course, fire, as we've been experiencing. Fire isn't always associated with drought, but some of these really big fires that we've had in the past 20 years have been in the worst drought years. I'm thinking 2018, 2012, and 2002, and of course this year. So drought can have a lot of different impacts beyond the forage. And I wanted to mention too, that when we're talking about rangelands, we are talking about areas that aren't irrigated and are used, of course, for grazing, but beyond that, they're not intensively managed for agriculture. And by intensively, I mean that they're not irrigated. We don't have supplemental irrigation usually on rangelands. We don't fertilize rangelands. And in fact, fertilization can cause blooms of invasive species or annual species, which are less desirable. And we also, while we do actually sometimes seed rangelands, we have really low rates of success. So when we're talking about rangelands in particular, we have fewer tools to manage in ways that, you know, is very linear. Like, we can apply management actions, but that doesn't mean necessarily we're going to get the results we want. So I think it highlights their vulnerability to drought, and also kind of our responsibility to understand them and manage in ways that lead to their sustainability, because we don't have a whole lot of tools to stuff the cat back in the bag if things go wrong.
What does drought look like on your pastures that you use?
Well, Greg, I might take this just a little bit different direction than Retta did, and then I'll come back to that question. But when you asked the question, how does drought impact the plants? And from our perspective, you know, really watching cattle, working with cattle, spending time with cattle, the impact on the cattle, because of the impact on the plants, is amazing. And it's not just physiological that we see changes, but also behavior. And that's one of the biggest challenges for us. We spend a lot more time in the saddle in a drought year than we do in a regular year, just because the cattle don't react, and they don't act in ways that we would expect them to. They're difficult. They're different. They're difficult. And it's really an intense year when we have one like 2018 or currently in 2020. The other thing is, Retta mentioned that, you know, water is impacted, of course, and water is a management tool to using rangeland. And so that's one tool less than we have in a normal year. So we use the water to move cattle or to hold cattle or to just manage the grazing. And that's really had a strong impact on the livestock from that perspective.
Let's talk about livestock management then. At this point in the season, I mean, what choices do I have in relation to livestock management to get through this drought? I mean, many of the options in front of us right now they're undesirable or costly, but what can I do in terms of assessing costs and trade-offs of those choices?
Retta, why don't you start and I'll bring up the tail on that one.
Well, yeah, so I think it's a pretty challenging time. A colleague, Haley Wilmer, and I used to talk about where we are now is maybe the drought emergency room. So we need to get out of the emergency room before you can address underlying issues. So we do have with Extension, there's a couple different tools that I would direct people towards. The agriculture and business management team with Extension has put together some different tools. They're called decision tools, and they can help producers evaluate the financial ramifications of different choices like buying hay versus selling cows, or buying hay versus selling cows versus moving to different pasture in maybe another state. So these are available on my website, which is rangemanagement.extension.colostate.edu under the Responding to Drought tab. You can go under there and then get links to the ABM website to download those tools. Basically, what they allow you to do is enter numbers about the prices of cows, the prices of hay, and to just get some bounds around your decision. Of course, they don't make the decision for you. Only you can do that, but they can help maybe put some numbers to the potential decisions you might make. There's also the Farm Service Agency that folks might consider if they haven't already. Farm Service Agency offers disaster programs, and many counties in Colorado are currently eligible. So the best thing to do, I think, there is just to contact your local Farm Service Agency and talk to them if you'd be eligible for any of the programs. And moving forward, they also have insurance programs that you do have to sign up for in advance. But there are insurance programs for like forage insurance. So those are some options. And then finally, we have a fact sheet through CSU Extension on alternative forages that you might consider given that hay is expensive.
So Greg, I would chime in here regarding options in the current situation. None of them are pleasant and all of them are costly, would be my first comment. I think later we're going to talk a little bit about drought management plans, but I think that if you don't have a plan already, and as Retta spoke about the emergency room, there's two options. And one is to reduce the number of cattle on your forage, or to provide supplemental forage in the form of hay, or move them to another state or another area. And so, again, none of those are pleasant and all of them are costly. But I think prior planning is really the key to surviving a drought year.
Not a lot of great options at the moment, but there are, like Retta said, you have all those, you can look for those tools right now through your FSA or rangemanagement.extension.edu that can help you out. What about managing rangeland and forage? How can I monitor rangeland and pasture to ensure that they're not overused when plants are drought stressed? And what are the potential consequences of overuse?
So I can talk a little bit about that. I do want to mention, I forgot to mention it, Janie, jump in on this. Per the above question, I forgot to mention, you know, if folks are destocking, I would just put in a, you know, product placement reminder to think about destocking strategically or culling animals strategically. I think that's, you know, pretty obvious, and I assume most people would do it. We did see in 2018 that,
because perhaps of the stress level that people were experiencing. There were a couple cases where people just culled the first however many cows that walked through the gate. So I'd encourage people to think more strategically about animals that they're culling and how they're building herd genetics moving forward.
Well, so I guess going back to the question about managing rangeland and forage, and you know, what to be looking at to make sure that you're not overusing the range when plants are drought stressed. What I would encourage people to look at is what range scientists call utilization. And so basically looking at what is the residual left on the plant, and specifically grass plants, and how many grass plants are grazed in a pasture or in a allotment or whatever management unit you're working with. So we know that intake declines drastically when plants are about 2 to 3 inches tall. And we also know that, especially on shorter statured grasses, so like Sandberg's bluegrass, you probably don't want to go too much lower than that on the grass plant. On plants that are a little bit taller, so smooth brome or needle and thread grass, about 4 inches might be a good guiding point of the point at which you don't want to graze below. Now, the reason for that, I think, goes back to what we know about how grass grows and how grass, you know, survives on rangelands. As I mentioned, you know, grass are adapted to both grazing and to drought. So they can withstand both. But the key is the root system. And how the root system builds out over time is that when grass grow their leaves, they generate carbohydrates, and they always prioritize leaf growth over root growth. So let's say in the springtime, as plants start to grow out those leaves, they eventually get to a point where they are producing more carbohydrates than is required for leaf growth. And then that's when the root system starts growing. We know that the root system is really important. I think this is pretty intuitive. If you have a really robust root system, it's much easier for grass plant to extract soil moisture, even when soil moisture is really low. But on the other hand, if you have a very small root system, plants can desiccate and die, even with pretty okay soil moisture. So the key point there is, yes, I think people should be looking for utilization this year, how much they're using, how many plants, and how much grazing is occurring on those plants. But the key here is the consequences of overuse come from a chronic situation. They come from when that overuse happens year after year after year. So this year, I expect range to be used pretty hard because there aren't a lot of options and plants didn't grow that tall in the first place. But the key is to avoid that being the norm. So that comes to the point of long-term, as well as this year, I think it's important to know what your supply is relative to your demand. So what is the supply of forage relative to the demand from the livestock? Unfortunately, in Western Colorado, this is actually way harder to know than you would think after like 150 years of range science. But it is hard to know. You know, it changes year to year, and it is pretty hard to measure biomass in a way that's accurate on the scale that we need. So I would encourage people, if they're interested in looking into that, they're welcome to contact me or my counterpart, Annie, on the Eastern Plains to get perhaps a more accurate estimate of what is their biomass. And if you can't get that estimate, there are some tools available, but they're a little bit cumbersome right now. But if you can't get that estimate, then that's when, again, I really encourage people to look at utilization. And that is, again, looking at how many plants are grazed and how low the grazing occurs. You want to try to stay below 50% use of total biomass. And since most of the biomass is actually in the base of the plant, that translates to that 2 to 4 inch number that I mentioned before.
Okay, no, thank you. Yeah, Janie, do you have any comments that you'd like to make on that, on managing rangeland and forage?
I would tag on to what Retta said in regards to a chronic situation. We frequently talk about on our ranch and on our range that we manage every single year for the drought years. You know, it's really easy when the grasses stirrup high or up to your knees on a horse, it's really pretty easy to do what we do relatively. But when the grass is not even up to your horse's knees, those years are the tough ones. So by trying to leave excess forage on those good years, and we rotate so that we're grazing the plant in the spring one year and the fall the next year, just to give that plant an opportunity to put that root system down that Retta talked about. That's really critical to success, long-term success for sustainability purposes of the ranch, is to really care for those forages every year, not just in a drought year.
Think of every year you're planning for the drought year. In years like this year, grass forage, it's reduced in drought, but can drought actually kill forage and grass?
Yeah, so that question is, it depends. We do know that at lower elevations, there's been some studies in the southeastern Utah area and in Moab area, southeastern Utah, where they did find that droughts, like the one that we've had this year, can cause grasses to die. And that's probably because at lower elevations, grasses, cool season grasses, which are the dominant species we have in western Colorado, are at the limit of their what they can withstand habitat-wise. So at lower elevations, yes, we can see mortality of grasses. And what that means, I think, moving forward, is that especially at lower elevations, we're not going to just bounce back to 2019 if we do get rain next spring. And so I do think caution is advised next spring, especially at those lower elevations. On the other hand, we know, again, that drought is normal. It's part of the deal here in western Colorado. And in along those lines, grass can withstand drought. So I would say we know that going into this winter, things really aren't probably in great condition. But if we do get, you know, a slow melt off of snow and a wet spring, things could bounce back, especially at those higher elevations. So again, I think it depends. Drought can kill forage and grass species, especially at the lower elevations. And then I think the things to watch moving forward are going to be what happens this spring, and that will impact what kind of forage and recovery is available next year.
For both of you, what can I start planning for next year? And are there going to be any residual impacts to forage or grass?
Yeah, I think going back to Janie's point and what I touched on the chronic situation, I think there'll be residual impacts, especially if you've been chronically overusing the range. Because then, of course, the root system of the plants is more attenuated. You might have higher mortality of grasses, and plants are in worse condition this fall, and so there'll be a slower recovery in the spring. So that's when I would expect more residual impacts. I'd also expect more residual impacts at lower elevations, like maybe below 6,000 or 5,500. But I think at higher elevations, there is probably more resilience to the conditions we have this year. But again, I would evaluate, you know, that question of utilization and then really watch what happens in the springtime. If we have favorable, cool, wet conditions for an extended period, that's when especially I think we could see some good recovery.
I might just tag on there that the last 2 out of 3 years have been drought years. And so those impacts, it's been kind of interesting in our area, specifically where we run. In 2018, our issue was water, but not forage. In 2020, our issue is forage. Water is okay, not great, but okay. And I just think that's a residual impact of 2 out of 3 drought years. 18 was very dry, 19 was very average, and here we are again, very dry. And I think that impact on that forage is, I think we've seen some of that because of those 2 out of 3 years.
I know that's a good point. It's been a wild past couple of years. We mentioned earlier a few tools to assess that are out there, but what are some useful tools to help me assess drought and forage conditions?
Well, I think nothing is better than getting out and looking around at a pasture.
but that's not really a tool, but that is something I encourage people to do, take a look, and, you know, all the things Jenny's saying in terms of calibrating what she's seeing on the land with her past experience. I think that's really useful and important. In addition, I would point people towards the Drought Outlook, which is a product that's put forth by NOAA, and it forecasts drought based on current conditions and then also signals like temperature signals and precipitation. And, you know, forecasts are challenging. They're forecasts, right? They're not predictions. They're not guarantees, but they're just one tool in the toolbox that might be useful for making a decision or at least knowing why you're choosing what you choose. The drought forecast right now, it's available through different means. You could just Google Drought Outlook. And then there's also a pretty useful website that I use a lot through University of Colorado and their Western Water Assessment. They have a dashboard available, which I can give you the link, Greg. But they have a whole suite of climate and weather tools on that, including the drought monitor. But the drought outlook in particular is not looking great for the next couple of months. Forecasters are predicting continued drought through November 30th and expansion. And my understanding is a lot of that has to do with higher than average temperatures. So my understanding, at least with this year, is that the temperature signal and the probability of higher than normal temperatures was pretty strong for forecasters, but the precipitation is uncertain and harder to predict in general. But I think the seasonal drought look is a great tool just for understanding where we are and then what things look like moving forward. But it is a forecast and should be interpreted as such. For the Eastern Plains, there's a tool called GraphCast that might be useful. It doesn't exist for Western Colorado, but GraphCast basically, they've mined data from 1984 to current. And then they have made predictions, enabled people to understand more about what timing of precipitation is most important for forage production. And then you can make forecasts moving forward about the probability of different production levels. So that would be a tool for folks on the Eastern Plains, but not Western Colorado, unfortunately.
That's GrassCast, C-A-S-T.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Back to you, Janie. So what are some of the tools that you use for your range and your pastures?
Through Ag Risk Advisors, and we purchase PRF, Pasture, Rangeland, and Forage Insurance. And that's a good partnership in working with Ag Risk Advisors and kind of assessing the long-term weather. That's probably the most effective tool that we use.
So we've been talking a lot about just the impacts of drought and the choices that we can make right now to alleviate the stresses that we're feeling from current conditions. Are there any opportunities with drought? Are there, we're going to start talking about just what hopeful pieces of information can you share? And what steps can I take to learn from this drought and make a new or better drought plan?
I think the best opportunity that we can look for in these situations, and having been through this in 2002, my husband and I, we didn't have as many cattle as we do now, but in 2002, we sold half our cows for $300 a head, and nothing like an education to do something like that, believe me. And as Howard always says, you don't get an education for free. And that one cost us a lot. But I think it's really important to manage that process. We didn't just, as Retta said earlier, we just didn't go out and gate cut 100 head of cows off of the 200 head that we had. And I think the opportunity truly is that your herd's going to come out of this a younger herd. Certainly, you're going to be selling some cattle that you probably should have sold, whether they're maybe they walk off a little bit, maybe they have a bad udder, maybe they typically don't raise a very big calf, they've got some chronic health problems. Those are the cattle that you want to take out of the herd. If you're going to have to destock, let's get rid of the cattle that are not as productive. So we always talk about this and say, you know, in 03, 04, we had a really young herd of cattle to start over with. And we saw the same thing in 2012. We sold, that year we only sold 50 head of cows. In 2018, we sold about 70 head of cows. But again, always looking for those least productive cows to take out of the herd and leaving you with a more productive, more cost-efficient herd. And I think that's the biggest opportunity that is out there.
Retta, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I think just, you know, bridging on what Janie said, I actually had a producer come up to me a couple of years ago. I was doing a drought workshop in southwestern Colorado. And after the workshop, he came up to me and he said, "You didn't ask us it about any of the opportunities that came out of drought." And I think, you know, Janie just highlighted some of the opportunities she's found. And it's not to underplay how challenging drought is now and where we are right now, but just that sometimes challenges also bring learning. And so I think that's a little bit redeeming, even though things are hard right now. So important to keep in mind.
Is there any kind of blueprint, or are there some things I can really think about from this drought if I want to start to make a new or better drought plan?
Greg, I think the most important learning and lesson that should come out of any drought for any producer is to have a plan. Making decisions under the stress of the moment is never a good idea. And if I could just touch on kind of a side note here, you know, farming and agriculture and livestock production is very stressful on a good year. And certainly during times like this, we see the toll that it takes on producers. And so I just want to kind of highlight that for just a moment, that it's okay to not be okay, if I can say that, and look for some support, absolutely. But that drought plan kind of provides some peace of mind for us. And we actually did this in 2012. We sat down and said, okay, what portion of this herd are we married to? What portion do we absolutely, under no circumstances, will we part with? And what portion will we part with, and how will we part with them, and how will we structure it so that we get the best result and looking for those opportunities? So I guess my point is the most important part of a plan is to have a plan and have it written down. It can't just be some foggy idea in the back of your brain. Have it written down, share it with the people that are in the decision-making capacity, but also everybody else, because it's just as stressful for everybody else in the operation. Have a drought plan. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think Janie pretty much said it all. Well, I guess one thing that resonated with me that Janie said was, you know, she had a really defined goal. Like, she defined what her and her husband Howard wanted and couldn't part with. And I think that's an essential part of a plan. You know, a plan needs to have that in it. What are you trying to achieve and what are you working towards? And the other components, at least from a drought planning perspective, maybe an academic perspective, is that goal, actions, how are you getting there? And then we also talk about triggers. So those are decision points, signals in the year that either signal that you need to make a decision or that you need to consider a decision. So there's a couple, you know, I'm sure there's quite a few more, but there are some drought planning resources on our website, which you mentioned earlier. And there's in particular a pretty good guide from the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. And then there's also one, I guess with a drought plan, I think of it in two ways. One is, you know, what are you going to do in a drought year? But then what are you going to do long term to build resilience and overall profitability to be able to continue through drought? And so in Western Colorado, that can mean, you know, being adaptive on public lands.
So the University of Arizona has a guide for working with public agencies on managing public lands in drought and building in more flexibility. So those might be some resources folks could check out.
May I add just one more piece to that drought plan?
Yes, yeah.
It's really much easier to take the steps if you know what those steps are. And to Retta's point of having the triggers, if this happens, this is what I'm going to do. And mm-hmm. I think that has really made the process less painful and more productive in our ranch's experience.
No, I like that, that if blank happens, this is what I'll do. That's a good way to really start thinking about this in the future. And
I think that's really important with any disaster, as we've seen with the fires here in Western Colorado. I'm not sure that a lot of producers have a management or have a disaster plan. And it's something that we talk about. If this happens, then what will we do? And I think that's really something that producers need to talk and think about more, because there's one in this business, it's one disaster after another, and it's how you manage those disasters that make a difference.
Oh, no, thank you. That's a really good point. So are there any other last bits of information that you'd like to provide for our listeners before we finish? So just before we finish off, what if I'm in need of more forage and don't have any? People who are listening, where can they find emergency forage supplies?
Well, the silence is deafening.
Yeah.
Are you hiding somewhere?
Yeah, the silence speaks to where you can find. No, I'm just kidding. So, I mean, this is the question everybody's asking right now, the thing that everybody wants. I think a critical piece here is the reducing the herd size and reducing the herd size strategically, and then also thinking about the financial ramifications of feeding versus selling for the remaining herd. So those are two things, but in terms of emergency forage supplies, one could check out the Hay Exchange, which is a website that lists by state and beyond hay that is available for sale. There might be other resources too. You could consider alternative forages, or perhaps, you know, planting of annuals, fall or spring planting of annuals if you do have some tilled fields that could help bridge the shoulder seasons. And what was the other one? Oh, and then of course the Farm Service Agency, they do have some drought-based disaster programs that might be able to provide some funds for forage.
And Greg, I would come full circle with our discussion today and just say that this is where life gets real, and none of the decisions, none of the options are pleasant, and they're all costly. And that would be my thought, back to Retta's thought, that is destocking the better thing to do, or does it make sense to buy hay? And those are all painful decisions.
I really appreciate that, and I'm sure our listeners appreciate everything that you've had to say today. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Definitely. Thank you for touching base with us on this tough topic.